Hey guys, it's Vinny B. Raider Nation In the Huddle is all about giving our fans the best opportunities in life. TAT is a new product that allows smokers to enjoy the sensations of smoking with zero tobacco and zero nicotine content. Finally, a cigarette you could feel good about, similar to Raider Nation rituals of winning championships. TAT offers the beyond nicotine experience with its beyond tobacco-based material in taste, smell, touch, sight, and sound without nicotine or tobacco. TAT offers a better option to completely remove nicotine intake without compromising the smoking experience. TAT, beyond tobacco. Raider Nation, get your free pack of TAT today at TriTAT.com.
Broadcasting live from the RNR studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, it's the premier destination for an inside look into the Las Vegas Raiders. You're in the Huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, presented by Tequila Embajador.
We go right back out to the Raider Nation listener line. Mitch is in New Jersey. How you doing, Mitch?
Hey, Vinny, how's everything?
Everything's going great.
Hey, this just shows you they don't need three preseason games. I mean, if a team can rest their first and second quarterback, I know he's hurt again. He's a bit of a delicate genius there, Mr. Marcus Mariota. And I'm not a Nate Peterson fan, but I guess if you can get a lot for Marcus, they should do it. And one thing about, I follow all the LA teams, the Rams. You have connections there, Vinny. You got to talk to somebody. Those uniforms are horrible. It was hard to watch. It really is. They're not the Chargers. The Chargers are like the second banana along with the Clippers, right? But the only with the Rams, they shouldn't have left. But those uniforms are hideous. Would you agree?
I don't like the blue, the all blue. I do think when they break out their new kind of retros, which are modern retro, I think people are going to like those. I like them. I'm not a big fan in any situation at all of one color, like blue on blue. I do like white on white. I love that. So when a team goes on the road, let's say Alabama, when Alabama's football team goes on the road and they're in their all white with their red hat, love it. But I do like the Rams when they have their gold, pants and their white jersey, or their gold pants and their blue jersey. I think that they should kind of go exclusively with that, especially the ones that reflect, those 80s Rams with Eric Dickerson and those guys, 70s, 80s. I'm with you. It's Nate Peterman, by the way. And I think Nate Peterman as a third quarterback is not a bad option at all. I do think that the preseason is important. I get it. You're not playing your starters, and nor should you, really. The games are meaningless from that perspective. But, for somebody like an Alex Leatherwood, for somebody like a Nate Hobbs, for somebody like a Tanner Muse and Trayvon Morrig, and Andre James, who didn't play this Saturday but did the previous Saturday, I think he's going to be shelved for the rest of the preseason. Some of those young interior defensive lineman, Malcolm Kuntz, the rookie from Buffalo who flashed. Amik Robertson, who's playing well, I think. I'm sure he's on the bubble. We'll see what happens with him. But I think that he's starting to settle in a little bit. I think it's going to be important for Isaiah Johnson, who's returning to practice this week after, an injury kept him out of OTAs and most of training camp. He's going to get a look on Sunday against the 49ers. I think it's important for Devon Diablo to get out there and get his feet wet a little bit. So I'm with you that in the whole scheme of things, from a starting standpoint and your key players, it probably isn't the biggest thing. But that doesn't mean it's not big for a lot of players on your roster. You got half of a roster that right now is fighting for jobs, and a lot of those guys are going to win jobs. And the what separates some players from another, it's very thin. A lot of times it's special teams. A lot of times it's versatility. I felt like, the Raiders released Rasul Douglas today, the cornerback, the veteran cornerback. I think his lack of versatility may have hurt him. You look at Nevin Lawson. I know that everyone wants him off the roster, but Nevin Lawson is a guy who does a lot of different things for the Raiders. They can rely on him in a lot of different roles. He's not the best cornerback out there. But when you're a depth player and you can play a bunch of different positions outside, inside, could probably play a little bit of safety as well, if need be, that becomes important. Not all backup players are going to be great players. They're backup players for a reason. But if there's if you could do multiple things from that backup role, it just coaches like that. Okay, and those kind of guys become valuable. And there's always the special teams factor to play in it as well, which is a big part of football and a big part of what every team does and usually dictates the bottom of that roster. Your backups are going to have to play special teams. Point, exclamation point. And so some guys that you're like, why did he make the team? Well, he's a much better special teams player than the other guy, and he can be capable enough if called upon to get some snaps as a positional player. So you always have to keep that type of stuff in mind. I'm not saying Dalen Levitt's going to make the team, but his versatility, his ability to play special teams, that is important. The bottom of your roster has to be able to be good in special teams. Because I'm telling you right now, if you sometimes sacrifice special teams at the bottom of your roster, it's going to rear its ugly head. That's where the guy blows a block and your return guy gets obliterated, or your punter gets a punt blocked, or the guy returns a touchdown on a kickoff or a punt. So you have to be strong in all areas. And some guys are just better at that than others. And in the whole scheme of things, the role they play in special teams supersedes what they might do as a positional player. So just, you know, kind of always keep that in mind. But to me, preseason games are still important. Now, do I think you need three of them? Probably not. I think that eventually they're probably going to work their way to an even number of games, an 18-game schedule.
Yeah, thank you for answering Mitch in New Jersey's question. We've got to get out to Jesse Merrick. Has been waiting patiently to get on the
okay.
line.
I'm not. My reception here is not good. So I was waiting to get a text on that. Sorry about that, Jesse. I was going on and on, but we are going to go out to the Raider Nation guest line and welcome in our good friend from Channel 3 NBC affiliate here in Las Vegas, Jesse Merrick. Jesse, thanks for spending some time in the huddle, and thanks for listening to my explanation on why preseason is important. What do you think about the preseason?
No worries, man. I was tuned in. I was all here for it. I think it's important, man. I mean, simply for the fact that letting you fill out your roster and figure out what you really got. I mean, think about it. If there were no preseason, the rest of the world wouldn't really know about Nate Hobbs. I mean, we see him obviously do his thing in practice on a week-to-week basis and stuff, but the way that this kid's shown that he can get it done in the game, I think is massive for earning the coach's trust. So from that standpoint alone, I think that's kind of, the observation number one as to why you need it.
Okay, well, you brought up Nate Hobbs. The secret is out, it looks like. And, I think that it's beyond making the 53-man roster. I think that he's solidifying a starting role on this Raiders defense. But I got to ask you, Jesse Merrick, your impression so far of young Mr. Hobbs from Illinois?
Man, he's been the story of the preseason, hasn't he? I mean, he's been a lot of fun to watch. He's shown he can do it not only in the nickel, but also outside a corner. And he's done it and been smart about the way he's doing it. I mean, the interception that he made, I haven't gone back and watched the game yet, so I'm going off of just watching it one time live, but I believe that wasn't even his responsibility. I think he just flew in there and intercepted the pass, you know, covering for someone else. So, to me, just what this kid has shown, and Gruden mentioned the fact that he's got that it factor, I mean, getting that out of a fifth-round pick, a guy that can bring that kind of juice to your defense, that's massive. I think it was Mayock said, if you have multiple third-round picks, it should be like stealing. Well, it looks like they got a heck of a steal in the fifth round.
Yeah, they did, and you're right. The play was purely a football play, instincts, knowing what to do and when to do it, and he just took off running, never lost track of the football, got to his man, cut through his Tyree Gillespie, the tight end, to get there, and just makes a spectacular play. And that's what you want to see. You want to be able to don't just make the play, or don't just, you know, be where you need to be or anything like that. Make the darn play. And far too often these last couple of years, the Raiders just haven't had guys like, whether or not they're capable or even just willing to go up and make the play. And Nate Hobbs, I don't think, is afraid of anything. And he's going to do that and has done that. In addition, though, Alex Leatherwood looked pretty good again on Saturday. I think Malcolm Kuntz played well. Javon White, unfortunately, he got hurt, but he was playing well. Trevon Moehrig continues to play well. We're talking about a lot of these young players right now that are flashing the way they need to flash out there in training camp, in the preseason. And if some of these, and we aren't even talking about yet because we haven't really seen them in games anyway, Henry Ruggs, Bryan Edwards, Trevon Mullen, some of these starting young starting players who presumably are kind of turning corners themselves. If as many of these guys are on track to turn those corners as it looks like, what, has that changed the narrative of what John Gruden and Mike Mayock have been doing from a roster perspective these last few years?
Oh, it'd be massive. I mean, look at simply even just Tanner Muse. I mean, what he's managed to do. So many people were talking about how much they blew that pick and all that stuff. I mean, but, like, he got hurt, you know. There's not a lot you can do when you get hurt. But people are talking about, like, oh, a wasted pick, all this stuff. I mean, clearly the kid has shown what he can do thus far, and he's come back bigger, stronger, faster, and he's looked really good. But then again, you mentioned the guys like Ruggs and Bryan Edwards. Like, simply the fact that Gruden is holding them out, like, he's sitting out the guys that he thinks are going to be his guys. And throughout camp, we've seen some consistency from Ruggs and Edwards. So that's been massive. So doing that would completely flip the script, I think, on what people have said. Because obviously Ruggs being the first receiver taken, and you see the different production that these other receivers that were drafted outside him have had, that's probably never going to go away. But if Ruggs comes in and is a really good player, a solid starter for this team, that kind of quiets some of that narrative as well. You have Bryan Edwards coming back. That's a big one. And then you hit on a guy like Nate Hobbs. All of a sudden it goes from what the heck are these guys doing, you know, reaching on guys like Leatherwood and Merrick or whoever. You know, Arnett's going to be another story depending on kind of what his role is. I still think he's come back and looked a heck of a lot better. But it just changes the narrative 100% around this whole thing in terms of their draftability and stuff like that. Because these are guys that, again, are maturing, and it just goes to show you how much of a difference a real offseason can make for young guys like that.
Yeah, I totally agree. And we're talking to Jesse Merrick from Channel 3, the local NBC affiliate here in Las Vegas. Jesse, we haven't even brought up Divine Diablo, who looks like he's going to get some run this week and Sunday against the San Francisco 49ers. And I bring him up because, obviously, that linebacker group has taken a big hit over the last week or so. Nick Wachowski goes down. He looks like he's on track to come back this week. But Nicholas Morrow and Javon White, it doesn't look all that good for any kind of a return immediately. It looks like both of those guys are going to be out at least a little bit of time. What are your thoughts on where they are at linebacker, and how long do you give it before maybe you go out and start looking for some help elsewhere?
Yeah, I mean, look, it goes from, wow, look at the depth that they've got in this linebacking core. You know, this is great. You've got guys like Javon back there. And then again, you mentioned we haven't even seen Divine Diablo yet. And then Tanner Muse kind of showing out to, oh, no, we're really going to test this depth and see what they look like. You know, especially not knowing quite how long Javon Morrow are going to be out, you know. So that's the thing where I think you do go shopping a bit. You see the reports about Mark Barron being in the mix. You know, he's a guy similar to Javon White, undersized guy that can kind of fly around, more of a coverage-type player that can fit into that mold. So clearly the Raiders are already a bit worried about it and you know, kind of fishing out there, seeing what the market looks like. Obviously, the fans want to see KJ Wright. We'll see what happens with that. I know he's getting a lot of attention from Seattle, so I'm sure the price is only going to go up, especially given the need that the Raiders have at that spot. At least if his agent is worth his money at all, you know he's going to be driving the price up. But, you know, John Gruden's got to be sweating a bit because now you go and look at it, and it's Corey Littleton and Nick Kwiatkowski, who they were clearly hoping would be in that second unit. Well, both of those guys could be back out there, but so you kind of wonder, you know, what that unit's going to look like. Guys like Max Richardson didn't really play that well. Bilal had a couple good plays, but also at times, you know, looked like he was lost out there. But so I think we're going to get a really good look at Tanner Muse and perfect timing for Diablo to be coming back to really see what this kid's got.
Yeah, I agree. Big opportunity for Divine Diablo, who has one of the best names in the game, without question. Any expectations for Divine? You know, even just coming off what you saw over at Virginia Tech, and there's no question that he's a specimen. There's no question he flashed in pass defense, flew all over the field there in Virginia. So, I mean, if that can translate, that's a huge help.
Yeah, I mean, all the tools that he has in terms of looking at his draft profile seems to fit exactly what they were kind of looking for out of what Javon White and a Corey Littleton kind of provide. So bringing that into the mix. You know, he's a similar mold kind of to Tanner Muse as well, coming down as a safety. So, you know, I'd expect to see something like that. But just simply looking at the kid, like, he's a big kid. He's thick, and he's got the speed to go along with it. So, like, I'm really excited to see what he brings to the table in pads, too, not necessarily running around out there in shorts and stuff like that. So I'm real curious to see how he moves. You know, obviously coming down as a safety, you expect his coverage skills to be, you know, A+. But I'm real curious to see how he'll do against the O-line and things like that when he's coming on the blitz, you know, in terms of matching up against those guys.
Are we going to see any offensive starters outside of Alex Leatherwood on Sunday against the 49ers?
See, prior to us getting into the first preseason game against Seattle, I thought, all right, we're going to see him in that third one. Now, the way things have gone, I don't think we will. Yeah, injuries maybe play a bit into that, but I also just think Gruden doesn't want to put him out there because also look at the timing of it all. What, the last preseason game is, 2 weeks in between that and the regular season opener?
Yep.
For me, like, what's the point? I mean, okay, I understand if it's, you know, a week before the regular season is going to get going, all right, you get those juices flowing, but, like, you do it, and then you got 2 weeks until the game starts, so I don't see the benefit of it. I think more so they'll lean on practice and the fact that these guys have had a real offseason and been able to prepare and the work they put in practice.
What will we see of Marcus Mariota if he's physically able to go?
That's going to be interesting. I'm curious to see, and obviously Gruden's not going to throw the whole playbook out there. We saw how he was when we spoke to him after the practices out there. But I am curious to see what the play calling looks like with Mariota out there. I would love to see some QB runs and see him actually put it out there, but I'm sure he doesn't want to get that out there to the rest of the world. But I'm excited to see what he does. Obviously, he's had an up-and-down camp when he's been out there, but, you know, he's got all the tools, and we saw what it was like against the Chargers, so it's going to be very interesting to watch Mariota.
All right, last question, and it is about Marcus Mariota. Assuming he's healthy and assuming he's on the roster, I guess, that's always the big key to everything. There's always the possibility of a trade. But if Marcus Mariota is on this roster and healthy this year, will he have a role with the Raiders?
I hope so, because it'll make our jobs a lot more interesting, won't it?
Yes, I mean, no question about that.
It adds such an interesting wrinkle to the offense and keeps the defense guessing. You know, I don't see that there's any drawback to doing it. You know, the more you can make a defense think and have to prepare for and more you can put on their plate, the better that is for a team like the Raiders who's looking to improve in the red zone. And so you especially put them in there and put these guys in a bind. And I think and hope that the talk of Derek Carr not being the guy for this team goes away and is, you know, dead and buried, because let's be honest, like, he is a much better option than Mariota. From people that have sat at practice and watched, like, we can all say that without any doubt. But he deserves a role in this offense in a package, and I would love to see it, and it would be a lot of fun to watch, that's for sure.
I would too, and I think it's needed. I think the smart play is to figure out a way to get Marcus Mariota on the field to enhance your offense. Even Derek Carr brought it up. If you put that out there one time, it's going to be on their card every week. Every opponent that has to prepare for the Raiders is going to have to prepare for the possibility of that. And guess what? That takes 10 minutes, 15 minutes away from practicing against other stuff. So even from that perspective, it helps just to flash it, just to show it, and to have it in your pocket when needed. Jesse, thanks so much for spending some time with us in the huddle. Always a pleasure. Always enjoy the insight. I'll see you out at practice this week, and I'm sure out in San Francisco, or actually Santa Clara, next Sunday when the Raiders wrap up the preseason against San Francisco 49ers. Appreciate it, brother.
Yeah, of course. Have a good one, man. See you tomorrow morning.
All right, you too. That's Jesse Merrick from the local Channel 3 affiliate, NBC affiliate here in Las Vegas. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, brought to you by Tequila Embajador, Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM on a Monday.
Interact with the show. Text Vinny at 69187 or tweet at him at Vinny Bonsignor. This is In the Huddle with Raiders beat writer Vinny Bonsignor on Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM.
We are happy with Leatherwood. We wanted to see him do a couple more things tonight. He was the only starter, really, that went. We didn't let Andre James play. But we like what Alex is doing, and I think he got a couple series or most of the first quarter and fared pretty good.
That's Raiders head coach John Gruden talking about young Alex Leatherwood, the Raiders rookie right tackle from Alabama. Another positive step in the right direction for Leatherwood. Like I said earlier, that first series, it was actually the second series, I think, where the Raiders went in for a touchdown. They were running not exclusively, but definitely conspicuously over to Alex Leatherwood's right, to his side. And he was moving people and, you know, talking to John Gruden afterward to see if, you know, he had made a concerted effort to run behind Alex. And the answer was yes. And I think there's a reason why he's out there. They want to see what he's able to do and what he's capable of doing right now as a rookie, and getting him some work in some instances and situations that he's going to be called upon. And one of those is run blocking to his right. The Raiders like to run to their right in that zone run scheme that they have. And it's critical that Alex Leatherwood gets the job done. And he was definitely getting the job done on Saturday. Now, I also mentioned there was one speed rush that probably got the best of him a little bit. He was able to recover, I thought, and keep his quarterback safe and protected. Nate Peterman got the ball out, didn't get sacked, but it was a play that, you know, you could tell that some more work, some more refinement, some more polish, a better adjustment to the speed factor that he's facing in the NFL. You know, there's a way to do that where, you know, understanding like these guys, as Josh Jacobs told him, every guy that Alex Leatherwood faces from this point on in his career is going to be both fast, violent, and strong. That's three things, not two. So all of the above, they're going to be that good, right? And so you can't, you have to be in a rush, but not in a hurry, because you can't get your fundamentals out of whack trying to keep up with. I see so many offensive tackles get beat because they're so worried about the speed that they take themselves out of their fundamentals by being in a rush to keep up with that speed. There's a fine line where you have to do everything instantaneously, fast and quick, but also in a quiet way that you don't lose your fundamentals. I brought up hitting the baseball. All right. There's guys that they talk about it in baseball now. I want to quiet down my swing. It's, you want to maintain the bat speed because that's what it's all about. You want to be able to catch up to the fastball. You want to be able to, you know, adjust to whatever the, you know, the curveball or off-speed pitch might be, but you want to do it in an efficient manner. That's what being quiet is all about. You have to be able to do it all right now in a split second, but you also have to do it smoothly and efficiently. And I think that that's where, you know, Alex Leatherwood is trying to figure out that right line where not rushing and then overdoing it and getting yourself out of position as a result of that, but doing it quickly, instantaneously, at warp speed, while also maintaining all your fundamentals, all your footwork, all your technique, so that you're also in a position not just to get there, but to make the block and keep your quarterback clean. It's a fine line and it's an adjustment, but that's what preseason is for. And that's what, you know, every rep that he's taking in practice individually, 11 on 11s, in every form and fashion, this is getting him up to speed to deal with it. I think from the power standpoint, that dude's already there. We're going to go out to the Raider Nation listener line. Rob is in San Jose. How you doing, Rob?
Thanks for taking my call, Vinny. A couple of things. One I'm excited about, one I'm a little disappointed, I just heard. One I'm excited about, I'll get to first. One guy I haven't heard you mention and the guys on the television broadcast mentioned that I'm really excited about is John Simpson. I think that guy's been doing work at the guard position, and I think with some experience, Simpson and Leatherwood could be a Art Shell and Gene Upshaw. Not comparing them just yet, but I think those are two young men that are really impressing me with the work that they're putting in this offseason and preseason games. In terms of what I'm disappointed with, I just heard the fact that I've seen Pat Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Kelsey, Edwards-Helaire getting work in the preseason. And you're telling me that, or at least the gentleman you just had on, is telling me that Derek Carr and his people aren't going to get any work at all. I don't understand that. Kansas City has controlled this division for five straight seasons. You need to be working as hard as they are. And if Pat Mahomes can get out there every single game in the preseason, at least for a series or a quarter, There's no excuse for Derek Carr and the first-string offense not playing at least a quarter against the 49ers. I don't say that just because I'm going to the game on Sunday, but I don't like my first-string offense or my first-string defense getting zero work outside of a couple of scripted practices against the Rams in the entire preseason. If Kansas City can do it, we should be doing it. Period.
I covered a Los Angeles Rams team that went to the Super Bowl. Not one starter played in the preseason. I understand what you're saying, but I don't necessarily equate working harder, with working better and more efficiently. I don't think that there's a lack of effort going on. I don't think it's a lack of hard work. I don't think that you're losing any ground to the Kansas City Chiefs because they're playing some of their starters in the preseason. I just think that the Raiders want to keep these guys safe and protected, and you know they want their players to be out there September 13th and for as long as possible. Injuries obviously are a big part of this thing, but I think that they feel pretty good about where they are offensively from what they're seeing in practices. I don't think they feel like they need to get their starters out there. Now, that could change. And I think John Gruden is definitely weighing that. I don't think this is an easy decision that John Gruden is making. I don't think that he's just like, I don't care about getting guys out there. I think he does. But I also think when you start losing players the way they have, that's a cautionary tale for him. And he's got to weigh, have I seen enough in practice? Have I seen enough against the Rams? And the Raiders offense was sharp against the Rams. I'm just going to tell you, they were shredding the Rams at various points in that practice. So I like where I see the Rams or the Raiders offense right now. I don't necessarily think you have to get him out there. And again, John Gruden's weighing that, and I think he's going to take it really seriously, and we'll see. But if I was a betting man, I would say that John Gruden's probably going to rest, or not rest his starters, but keep his starters in bubble wrap. We're going to go out to the Raider Nation guest line and welcome in a really good friend of mine. And it's kind of a sad day today for the sports world. When you think about it, and certainly for anybody that's in Los Angeles, and I was in Los Angeles for many, many years. But I wanted to bring on a really good friend of mine and a great journalist in Los Angeles, Arash Merkazi. Arash, today is Kobe Bryant's birthday, and you can't, as much as we want to just, not go down those paths, it's just so sad to think about Kobe. I think we still need to honor him on days like today and just remember what we lost, truly what we lost in that horrible accident a couple of years ago, or January of 2020. First of all, thanks for spending some time with us in the huddle, and thanks for sharing your thoughts the way you have on Kobe. How are you doing today in a day where we think about Kobe Bryant?
No, thank you so much. Yeah, this is definitely one of those days where you always think back. I think it's today and tomorrow, because then May 24 is Kobe Day. I remember being at City Hall when they called the May 24 Kobe Bryant Day. So his birthday is today. Tomorrow's his kind of day in Los Angeles, and sort of a time to remember what he meant and, what he meant to the city. I mean, 20-year career, and there were so many people who, when he passed away, were very confused about why they were feeling the way that they did. That they maybe were not fans of Kobe or were not fans of basketball. But you have to realize that you watch this man grow up to be a man. I mean, he was 17 years old, as you know, when he came to Los Angeles. He needed his parents to co-sign his first contract. So when you see someone grow up from 17 years old to 41 years old and was a father of four and a husband and had really transitioned his life post, playing career. I mean, it was so tragic. It was so sad.
Yeah, no question about it. And Rosh is absolutely right. In Los Angeles, we saw a life arc from Kobe Bryant, like literally as a 17-year-old kid to a man who was, approaching the middle age of his life, had retired, had done everything that he could as a basketball player, was transitioning into other things in his life. We all know that he would have been spectacular, Adam, because Kobe Bryant didn't do anything not spectacularly. That's just the way he was in everything that he approached, and that includes, being a great father, and that role in his life expanding and blossoming. And so there was so many losses. And Arash, I think he hit the nail on the head. A lot of people were, you know, might have been a little bit conflicted because, let's face it, there were people who didn't like Kobe Bryant, maybe because he played on the opposing team, maybe because his style of play might have rubbed some people the wrong way. We both know, we were both there when Los Angeles, in some ways, sometimes was divided between a Shaq town and a Kobe town. Whose team was it? We remember all that drama.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I think that what everyone realized was he personified greatness, intelligence. He was also well-rounded. And I think that as time went on, all of those things began to emerge. And so we took so many different looks at Kobe Bryant through the years. And ultimately, what we figured out was this guy was not only a great basketball player, but a great human being who helped a lot of people. And so I think that's why people were like, wow, I'm really, really touched and hurt by this loss.
Exactly. You know, Vinny, I mean, because he wasn't perfect, right? And so he wasn't sort of this figure that didn't have his faults, that didn't have things he had to overcome in his life, whether it was his, you know, feuding with Shaq, whether it was wanting to leave. I mean, you remember, I mean, and I think people forget because it was only a small portion of the season. Before the Lakers traded for Pau Gasol, people had booed Kobe Bryant because he wanted to be traded to Chicago. I mean, he was done with being with this team to figure out a way to win a championship. And then they make that deal for Pau Gasol, and then he goes on to three more finals, back-to-back championships. And again, 20-year career, which is so rare, as you know, in this time of sports and guys going from one team to the next. To play your entire 20-year career in Los Angeles, and Vinny, the last game, of course, as you remember, the historic game, dropping 60 points. I think there couldn't have been anyone that you took to Los Angeles that meant more to Los Angeles than Kobe, in the sense that he was not old, right? I mean, yeah, this will be a sad day whenever we lose another great, but to have Kobe, to lose Kobe in that way, and right before his passing, Vinny, we had just kind of seen some of these YouTube clips of Gianna and how she looked like Kobe and played like him, and we were just really excited to see how she was going to grow up. And just a month before their passing, they were courtside at a game talking to LeBron. It was just, it just was surreal back then, and as crazy as it sounds, it's still surreal today.
Yeah, it is. I can't believe it. I still, to this day, cannot believe it. It hurts so much. I remember exactly where I was when friends started, you know, texting me to see if this was real, if this was, you know, accurate. And I was walking around in a trance. I was in Miami for the Super Bowl, and it was a gut punch times a million. It hurts so much. And you're right. You know, his daughter, the family. The arc that we witnessed him complete, you know, and was just starting a new chapter of his life. And by the way, we're talking to Arash Markazi. You can follow him at Arash Markazi. He is the host of the Arash Markazi show on 1090 The Mightier. Arash, you know, when we think about Kobe, there were so many, like you said, there was conflicted, there was the young Kobe, you know, taking too many shots, maybe he was a little bit arrogant, you know, or too arrogant. But I always tell people, you know, when you were 20 years old, were you the perfect person? And the answer is like, no. I'm like, well, then why do you expect anyone else to be a perfect person? And especially in a high-stakes sport, the Los Angeles Lakers, the pressure, yeah, all the accolades that were, you know, he was being talked about. He had to come hard like no other in order to live up to all the expectations, find his niche. And the thing that I always found great about him was he never shied away from any of that. He always accepted the challenge. He always won the challenge. And also, Arash, and I think you know this as well, there were plenty of sides of Kobe Bryant. There was the fierce competitor, the guy that would give you a dirty look if you asked, you know, a question that he didn't like necessarily during the playoffs. There was he drove a hard bargain with teammates. He drove a hard bargain with the organization. He wanted to win and made sure you wanted to win as well. But then I would run into him at Dodger games or around town, and hey, how's it going? And totally cool, totally chill. I don't think enough people saw that side of him, but I think, you know, in his passing, people are starting to realize, or began to realize, there was that side of him, and that made him even more charming to everybody.
100%. I think the Kobe that we covered during the finals years, during the Shaq Kobe years, that was a different Kobe than at the end of his career and post-career. I mean, post-career, Vinny, when he had retired, and you'd probably perhaps have seen him a few times, maybe not a nicer professional athlete that I had covered, you know, just in terms of knowing my name, knowing my family, knowing things like that. And you cover sports enough to know, you can probably count on one hand the number of guys post their playing career when did they see you. Certainly someone with the stature of a Kobe Bryant would do that. And he just, you know, he had two faces, but I think he had to have that. I think when they were going for those championships, he realized his legacy was on the line. So when we wanted to talk to him about, you know, how big is this game two win or game three win, like until they won the championship, he was not content. And so, you know, a little fun fact also, like when the Lakers were bad, he was actually very fun to cover because he, like, the stakes weren't as high. So pre-games with Kobe during those last couple of years when they were unfortunately one of the worst teams in the league, I just loved talking to him about European soccer and television shows and just life. So it definitely was different faces and different facets to that man.
Yeah, it's so funny you should mention that. I went up to Santa Barbara where you always have the you know, the Kobe Bryant basketball camp at UCSB. And it was right before free agency began, when I think Carmelo Anthony was a free agent. There were, you know, there were a bunch of guys that were free agents. The Lakers had money, you know, some money to spend. But Kobe was, you know, he's on crutches. It was when he was, you know, still coming over, recovering from the Achilles tendon injury. But I went up there expecting him to, you know, basically say, look, man, you know, we need to do this, we need to do that, you know, and be Kobe where, you know, driving a hard bargain, making sure that the front office did what it needed to do to maintain that level of play. And Arash, you know, I asked him about it. He's like, you know, they're going to do everything that they can. You know, I trust them. If we get those guys, great. If not, you know, that's cool too. I know that they're giving it the effort. And it was the first time that I realized, I think he's starting to see the end, and maybe this Achilles thing is going to be a little bit bigger challenge than even he thought. And he'd started to transition into, if it works, it works. If it doesn't, you know, and it was just a sign that he was kind of moving on a little bit and moving on with, you know, and leaving that whole thing behind about, you know, or else trade me because I don't want to be here if they're losing. So you're right. It was a different phase of Kobe. And that was what was so great about Kobe, was the different sides, was the different points in life. And we were fortunate enough, we truly were, to see it all, to see the entire arc. I just feel like Arash, and I know you probably feel the same way, I know you do, just the sense of loss of not being able to see him transition into older age and, you know, 40s and 50s, and to see what he would have been all about, because I guarantee you he was going to accomplish special things in those years of his life.
Yeah, I mean, anyway, you look at what he had done so far. I mean, he wanted to tell stories. He wanted to, you know, make movies, and he won an Academy Award and a Golden Globe. And, I mean, he was already off to a fantastic start to his post-playing career life. And for whatever reason, and we've been so blessed, most of our basketball heroes have lived long. You know, I mean, Will Chamberlain was one of the few, and even he was a little bit older, but, like, You look now like Oscar Robertson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and like Bill Russell. I mean, these guys are not supposed to pass the way he did. And I was in Miami as well for the Super Bowl. I had just landed, and when the first news reports came in, it didn't seem real. Kobe was not supposed to go out that way. It's like you're watching this movie, and there was like an alternate ending that we got to reverse and change because, like, something went wrong. Something went terribly wrong. Like, that's not the way his life was supposed to end. Because, again, we had seen what the next chapter was, and it was going to be incredible.
Yep, absolutely. Arash, thank you very much for sharing, your great thoughts on Kobe Bryant, on what is a day that, it brings back a lot of emotions. But I think ultimately it's being a birthday. You want to celebrate his life and think about those good, the good things, the good times, while also recognizing, man, still to this day, just a gut punch. Like I haven't experienced in many years. It literally hit me the way my own brother's death hit me and my father. Yeah. So it literally did, and I'm not exaggerating whatsoever. But I appreciate you sharing your thoughts on the great Kobe Bryant. Next time we'll have you on under better circumstances and talk about some football moving ahead as the NFL season barrels towards us. But I appreciate it, Arash. Take care of yourself. Thank you very much, and I will talk to you down the road, my man.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You got it. That's Arash Markazi, my great friend from Los Angeles. And we were there throughout the whole arc, and it was a pleasure and really honestly an honor to have followed Kobe's career. The second time I met him was at his summer league debut, Long Beach State University at the Pyramid. He scored 27 points. I forget who they were playing, but I was like, wow. I also remember there was a guy by the name of Derek Fisher in that game, a rookie from Arkansas Little Rock, that I felt like, yeah, the Lakers found a pretty good guard in that in Derek Fisher too. So, but to see Kobe go from 17 to a full arc of a professional career with one team, 20 years, it's just something that I'll never forget. And to this day, it still hurts deeply. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, brought to you by Tequila Embajador, Raider Nation Radio 920 AM on a Monday.
You're listening to Raider Nation Radio 920 AM. Now, back to your host, Vinny Bonsignor.
Not really, because the way my mama raised me, I was raised to be humble. And at the end of the day, I feel like it's God put me in these positions. I feel like I'm making the plays and I'm doing what I got to do. But end of the day, I feel like it's God put me in this position. I got to give all the glory to him. So I'm going to always be humble.
That's Nate Hobbs, the Raiders rookie cornerback from Illinois, who's made quite a name for himself, quite a splash here in his first two preseason games. And really for us, that got a chance to see him back in OTAs, got a chance to talk to him on draft night. That's when I kind of, my radar turned up a couple of notches. I just remember talking to him and was telling, I think it was my editor, I was like, man, this guy, there's something about him. There's just certain things that sometimes break through about certain people right off the bat. And I just felt like on draft night that there was something, not necessarily different, but something telling about Nate Hobbs, the way he carried himself, the way he explained his story, the way he wanted to thank the Raiders for taking a chance on him, the way he reminded us that he was going to remember all those cornerbacks, all those defensive backs that were taken before him that he felt he was better than, the way he said that he was always going to be thankful for the Raiders for taking that chance and that they were going to get the greatest underdog ever, basically, to kind of paraphrase what he said. And he's not just talking that. He's being about it. And from OTAs to now, he plays with a tenacity, with an intelligence level. He's calm. There's just so much to like. And it's hard not to go on and on about him because he's really been that good. But here's the other thing. He's not the only one of these young players. Especially, I get to see these guys in practice, and I can tell you right now that I feel like Henry Ruggs is headed in the right direction. I feel like Bryan Edwards is headed in the right direction. I think Damon Arnette is headed in the right direction. We're going to see once, and these guys haven't even played in the game, so, unfortunately, Raider fans haven't been able to see the progress up close and personal like they have with Nate Hobbs, but, I don't think we've been speaking out of line in talking about some of these young players in good terms. It's the truth, and it's nice to see a guy like Nate Hobbs kind of break through the way he has. Trayvon Morig has played a lot in this preseason and has more than held his own, and I think the experience that he's getting is going to be hugely beneficial for him. If you're the Raiders, and you're talking about a starting free safety as a rookie and a day one starter in that slot cornerback in Nate Hobbs, a day one starter at right tackle in Alex Leatherwood, not because, you know, the Raiders have been forced into that situation to play rookies that early and start rookies that early, but because legitimately they've earned it. I mean, the Raiders have veteran options all over the place at all three of those positions. But these guys have come in from day one and locked down their positions, and they've done it in a way that, to me, is really impressive. It's not just their play. It's their demeanor. When we were talking to, I forget who we were talking to, but it was it was Darren Waller talking about Trayvon Morrig and talking about how in the middle of all the yelling and screaming that was going on the practice field against the Rams, and there were some shenanigans, no doubt about it, as Darren talked about, you got a lot of egos out there, and it's a new jersey, it's a different jersey, and you're bringing it at a higher level than you normally do in practice because there's no more, I'm not trying to hurt anybody. Not to say that they're trying to hurt anybody going against a different team, but when you're playing not to hurt somebody as you do against your own team, but just playing kind of free and easy against another team, there's a huge difference in terms of intensity. And yet it got out of hand a few times, and there was, you know, heated moments. And as Darren Waller explained, there's Trayvon Morrig just kind of quietly doing his thing. Didn't need to be part of all that. Not to say that he didn't have his players, his teammates back or anything like that, but in terms of the talking, in terms of all that, he was just out there doing his job. And so it's the demeanor. It's how these guys have attacked these opportunities right now in a professional way. And I think that's going to bode well for them. I think it's going to bode well for the Raiders. I want to thank Arash Barkhazi, Sam Gordon, and Jesse Merrick for joining us in the huddle today. Thanks for the insight. Thanks for the enlightenment. Thanks, Arash, for taking us down memory lane with Kobe Bryant. I want to thank all the callers. I appreciate it as always. I want to thank the listeners. You guys are why we do this. I want to thank Damon Cotton for making us sound good back at home base. Appreciate everybody. We'll be back at it tomorrow from 4 to 6 p.m. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, brought to you by Tequila Embajador, Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM. We'll check you guys out tomorrow. Hey guys, it's Vinny B. Raider Nation in the Huddle is all about giving our fans the best opportunities in life. TAT is a new product that allows smokers to enjoy the sensations of smoking with zero tobacco and zero nicotine content. Finally, a cigarette you could feel good about, similar to Raider Nation rituals of winning championships. TAT offers the Beyond Nicotine experience with its Beyond Tobacco-based material in taste, smell, touch, sight, and sound without nicotine or tobacco. TAT offers a better option to completely remove nicotine intake without compromising the smoking experience. TAT, Beyond Tobacco. Raider Nation, get your free pack of TAT today at TriTAT.com.